Design Pickle is a big supporter of everything Unseminary. If you haven't heard, they are a flat rate, unlimited use graphic design service helping churches across the nation. We're a proud client of theirs and love how they help us make social media graphics and those downloadable PDF article summaries that we've been sending out. Even if you have a designer, you need to check them out. To learn more, visit designpickle.com/churches. On that same page, you can watch a totally free 30-minute video of me and the founder of Design Pickle talking about modern church marketing and, of course, pickles.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host here, and I'm just so honored that you took some time out to be with us today. We've got a great interview. I've actually really been looking forward to this interview for quite a while. We've got Scott Kramer from GT Church. This is a fantastic church you should be following. It's in Pennsylvania, two locations currently, in West Lawn and Kutztown. I've actually had an opportunity to be at both these locations. It's just really a fantastic church. Scott is the executive pastor at GT Church and oversees life groups and spiritual coaching and the school of ministry. Really fantastic. So Scott, welcome to the show.
All right, thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us a bit about the church? If people were to show up this weekend, what would they expect? Give us a kind of a flavor for the church.
Yeah, we are Glad Tidings Assembly of God Church, known as GT Church in our community. Mm-hmm. We are actually a 91-year-old church.
Fantastic.
But a very, I think you'd come here and have a very contemporary feel. I think if you think of like a, you know, kind of a hybrid of Elevation or Hillsong worship, that kind of style. Mm-hmm. And our aim with our message is always to make it relevant. You know, we've heard people say, you know, if I can't use it on Monday, we won't say it on Sunday. We really aim for about probably a 40-minute message that's very relevant and deals with real life issues. Mm-hmm. We have a teaching team approach. Our lead pastor, Brian Cook, is our lead pastor, and he speaks about probably 25 to 30 times a year. Mm-hmm. I have the honor of being part of the teaching team, and as well as several others. Mm-hmm. So it's a church of about 3,000. Mm-hmm. On the weekend, we got two Sunday morning services at our main campus at West Lawn, and then our Kutztown campus, about 20 minutes away, has a Sunday morning service at 10 a.m. as
nice.
Well.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is a great church. And if you ever are in that part of the world, make sure you get a chance to visit. Now, a couple of years ago, something pretty profound happened at your church that we want to kind of lean into and get your perspective on. Why don't you tell us a little bit of that story?
Yeah, I'll start by telling the story where I was. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like for our church, Rich, this moment was kind of like, in a very small sense, a 9/11, where you know where you were when you heard
right,
the news.
Right, yeah.
In that regard, obviously. I was at a pizza shop Sunday afternoon after my sons had a baseball tournament in a nearby town, and my phone rang from our facility director, and he's also the brother-in-law of our lead pastor. Mm-hmm. And John called me, and as soon as I picked up the phone, I was like, "Hey, John, what's up?" He's like, "Scott," he's like, "something awful has happened. Brian and Lynn were in a motorcycle accident." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, my face sinks, my heart sinks, and we're celebrating a trophy, right? We're with a whole bunch of families at this pizza shop, and my heart is in my foot right now. Mm. And I'm like, "John, what happened?" He's like, "Well, they got hit head on."
Oh my goodness.
We don't know many details. He said, "We just know that they got hit head on. They've been air rushed to the hospital," he said, "and we think we already lost Lynn."
Mm.
At which point, of course, I'm like ready to weep and cry.
Right.
And my wife sitting across the table having pizzas, looking at me, and she sees my face turn white. She sees the expression. And when he said, "Scott, we think we already lost Lynn," I mean, I just like, you lose it, you know. Mm. It's just one of those moments you're like, this is this happening? Like,
right.
This is surreal.
Right. Very
it's just,
surreal.
This can't be real. And
right.
So I said, "John, where are they? I'm leaving right now." So we grabbed the kids. We got three kids, two boys and a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Kate, we got to go right away. It's urgent." And I just, you know, told all the families at the pizza shop, "Listen, our pastor's in a horrible accident. We got to go right away." Mm-hmm. So I run to my parents' house, drop the kids off. We go to the hospital and of course, you know, encountered by several others who were there already, to only discover the worst imaginable thing, that Lynn had passed instantly on the motorcycle. What it turns out was they were driving home from a ride. They often would go out on a Sunday afternoon ride. It was their favorite hobby. Brian Lynn would ride motorcycle all the time for 20 years and would just, that was their thing. And so they're coming home from the, I think the Pretzel Hut in Lancaster and going around a very sharp bend a mile from their house. A guy who had way too much to drink crossed the center line and hit him head on. And Lynn, on the impact, her neck snapped and lost her life immediately. Brian, on the other hand, was pinned under the SUV for hours. Lost an enormous amount of blood. He lost his left leg on the scene. He's an amputee now from above the knee. So the bottom half of his leg, more than half of his leg, was lost on the scene. That's where the impact was, on the left side. He laid under the SUV for hours, you know, lost enormous amount of blood. I think after it was all said and done, many surgeries, 20 some surgeries, 36 units of blood. I mean, it was horrific.
Huge. Yeah,
it was
horrific accident.
Horrific. And the most horrifying part was we didn't know if Brian was going to live.
Right.
For the first probably almost week, his life was very in the balance as well. Mm-hmm. He had multiple internal injuries. The loss of blood was so severe. He had some head trauma. Both had helmets on, but it was, you know, his lungs just, it was a horrible, horrible season in our church life. And so you can imagine the communication firestorm and social media, all that, the media, everything just in high gear.
I'd love to, you know, obviously we're going to try to pick this apart. I want to do this delicately because, you know, Brian, obviously is a loved leader. You know, he had been the lead pastor at that point, 25 years, 27 years, something like that.
Yeah,
so I'm just trying to give some context. Had been at the church and really had been there through this growth, right? That the church, a church of 3,000 really was a significant piece of that puzzle.
That's correct, Rich. In fact, I grew up in the church.
Nice.
So Brian was my pastor. When I was in 10th grade, Brian got hired as an associate pastor in 1988. And then in 1990 or 91, I believe he was voted as the lead pastor. So he's been the lead pastor for 26 years or so.
Right.
And a lot of the growth has been under his leadership. He's a dynamic speaker, communicator, preacher, and leader. And so a lot of the growth that our church has experienced, probably when I was a kid, the church was 200 to 300 people.
Right.
And so in the last, under his leadership, 2,000 to 3,000, you know, it's just been a great growth. But yeah, and he, just so you understand, Rich, he speaks about this very comfortably. I mean, obviously it's traumatic. It's horrible. He lost his wife. He lost his left leg. But he does speak on it. He gets invited to share his story at churches. He, this year in August, he got to share his story with the entire Assemblies of God General Council. So he was, it was just, you know, to encourage people through these kinds of tragedies. And it was an awesome opportunity for him. So.
Yeah. And they, you know, to kind of jump ahead, the punchline is he ended up, and again, I'm compressing years in a long time. It was like 2 months in the hospital, a lot of work. And
yes, 51 days in the hospital.
Yeah, that's amazing. I ended up at GT. I think he had been back for maybe a month or 6 weeks, and got a chance to see, you know, Brian preach. And, you know, that was amazing. Yeah. And so what I want to do is, and again, I don't want to be light of the situation, but there are oftentimes in church leadership circles, you know, you'll hear the shorthand of like, well, what happens if, you know, the lead guy gets hit by a truck? And literally that's what happened. And and so what I'd love to do is, and that, again, not trying to be indelicate, to pick that apart. First of all, you as a leader, obviously you're, I would imagine there's multiple things happening in your brain at the time. There's, you know, how do we care for Brian as an individual? How do, you know, the family tragedy that has gone on there. And then obviously then what impact does this have on the church? How do we, in those early days, what were some of the first steps you took to try to manage all those, you know, various pieces of the puzzle?
Yeah, Rich. And again, there's so much to tell from the story. If I just give me a nod or something, I need to move on. There's so much to say, but you're absolutely correct. There were so many plates spinning at the same time in this kind of tragedy. There was caring for Brian and wanting to know that he had people with him, that I would be able to go visit with him as often as I possibly could. He wasn't just my pastor. Brian hasn't just been my ministry mentor. He was my friend, still is my friend, a great friend. And so it was emotional for me. I mean, it was emotional for all of us, the church, everyone. So while you're trying to manage your own emotions, you have to also think of all the different moving parts in the church. There's the care for Brian, there's the care for his his family, his three sons, our young adult sons. One of them married, one of them engaged at the time, and one heading off to college at that time. And then there's the church, you know, just the care for the congregation, all the communication that would have to happen. Mm-hmm. Everything that we were doing just came to a screeching halt for a season where there were some big things that we had to really sort through with whether or not we were going to still do them. We had a VBS, one of our biggest outreaches of the year. Over 1,000 kids come to our church for 4 days of VBS, 3 weeks after this accident.
Oh, my goodness.
We had to wrestle that to the ground with our board of deacons and our elder board to say, do we do this? We had a missions team leaving for Uganda, for Africa, the next week. Do we go?
What was going on? How did you come about making a decision one way or another? What was kind of factoring in on those decisions?
Yeah, so I'll say this. With Brian's style of leadership, first of all, we all knew Brian. We know Brian well, and we know his heart. And Brian would never have wanted ministry to stop on his account.
Right.
Regardless of the tragedy that we had said in the beginning days, this is unthinkable. It's unimaginable that this would ever happen, right? We knew Brian's heart to such a degree that we knew that he would say, listen, you go. The mission of the church doesn't change because of an individual's heartache, right? Mm-hmm. And so knowing Brian's heart for ministry and for the mission and the cause of Christ, we knew in our hearts that we could go forward with ministry. Mm-hmm. And Brian, part of his leadership style was very much an empowering and delegating leadership style, led by example so much. But he would you use this phrase already, Rich. He would say all the time, look, gang, if I get hit by a truck, Rich, he would say that all the time to us.
Amazing.
You know, as a means of like, listen, the show must go on.
Right.
Like,
it's bigger than
ministry,
me. It's bigger than me.
It's bigger than me. That's right. Yeah. It's bigger than me. While God has appointed me to lead this church, listen, if I ever get hit by a truck someday, somebody else is going to lead this church, and the staff will lead the church. And now we've scolded him 1,000 times since then. You can't say that anymore.
Stop saying that. That joke is
fine. You got to find a new axiom. We need an axiom update is what we call it. Axiom update. You got to find a new way to say that, okay?
Right.
Because you've been hit by a truck.
Yes.
We're done saying
we're done
that around
that.
GT.
We're done with that. Yeah, we're done with that. That's
but
amazing.
But yeah, and communication was a big deal for us in the beginning. And very fortunately, we had a very gifted and experienced communication director, Karen Troutman, who kind of helped us. One of her fortes was crisis communication.
Okay.
And so she was really, we feel like, man, God had put her there for such a time as this. And we could just really learn and think through all the different messages the church would give, updates 3 times a day on Brian's condition. People want to know, like the church, thousands of people, how's he doing? What's new? What's next? Like this constant flow of communication from the church and through social media. Then what we were saying on Sunday, the update on Sunday, like somebody had to preach. I was, you know, the board and the deacon board and elder board, the structure again that Brian had installed, was able to name me the interim pastor in the in the meantime for a few months while Brian was recovering. So it was that again. That was another part of the story where with the way that Brian led and having the structure that he had already put in place, there was no scramble for power.
Right.
There wasn't now the pastoral staff sitting there saying, who gets to do this? Who's going to do this?
Like, interesting. Yeah,
It was very clear, having appointed me as the executive pastor probably 5 or 6 years ago, there was no vying for position. The staff was amazing. I mean, we have an incredible team, and you know, with their incredible service, we were able to lead the church. And, and we've said for years now, a couple of years since the accident, the church hardly had a speed bump.
Right.
Because the ministry, obviously, this was way more than a speed bump in our lives, in Brian's life, the life of our congregation, our beloved pastor of 28 years, you know. But as far as like the ministry and the mission of the church, we were able to go on and to move forward.
Yeah, and that I'd love to dig into that a little bit, because when I heard this story, that was it was after so I know a couple of your team members, it was after the accident, but it was a few months in, and I remember thinking, I just assumed, like, so I guess everything came to a screeching halt. But actually my impression is actually that things, like you say, it from a mission point of view, you know, continued to go forward. What were some of the things that you did that God used in the midst of this to kind of help things, you know, continue on?
One of the keys in this season was our elder board.
Okay.
So Brian years ago had implemented what he called the elder board. So we have a deacon board. We're a congregational form of government in our church, and we have a board of deacons who helps to lead from a high level administrative mm-hmm. Purpose. But then he put in place an elder board mm-hmm. where they were appointed by Brian mm-hmm. mainly for support and accountability for the lead pastor.
Right.
And that elder board was composed of three resident elders and three non-resident elders. So the three resident elders were on staff.
Yep.
I'm one of them. Phil Baker's one of them, and Brian's another elder. And then we have Greg Hubbard, Tom Rees, and Jim Comenzo, who are non-resident elders. They're connected to our church, but they're not part of our church on a regular basis.
Interesting. Okay.
And so, I mean, they're connected deeply, but they were a team put together by Brian to just mm-hmm. to bring high level like vision, steering, mm-hmm. and accountability to Brian. And mm-hmm. so we've had these elders in place for years. And right. when this happened, we just felt like, you know what? Again, for such a time as this, this right. is a time where the elders who play a pretty much quiet role mm-hmm. behind the scenes, really just there mm-hmm. to support the lead pastor. We felt like this is a season where they need to come up front. Mm-hmm. We need to have the elders be visible in front of the congregation so that it provided security for the church family to say, mm-hmm. you know what, this deal is bigger than any one person. It's not on my shoulders. Right. While I was the executive pastor and given the opportunity to lead in that scenario, the future of the church laid in the hands of very capable elders and a very mm-hmm. capable staff.
Oh, it's fascinating. Now, I wonder if could you explain a little bit more detail around the internal, external elder board? Because, you know, the interesting thing about that, it is actually, like you say, for moments like this, that kind of structure, comes about. You just, you know, there are moments where you need that, you know, kind of some extra leadership. How does that work? Just kind of give us a little more explanation around that.
Yeah, and I think, again, that's one of the strengths of Brian's leadership, that he understood the importance of structure.
Yep.
That's an important word for us, and we didn't realize how vital that would be. So, we have a deacon board, which mm-hmm. is nominated and voted on by the congregation, seven people who mm-hmm. serve for a one-year term. But then there's an elder board that's appointed and selected, hand-picked by right. the lead pastor. Three of those elders are internal, meaning they're on staff, and three mm-hmm. of those elders are external, meaning they have a strong relationship connection
right.
to our church, but they're not paid staff members. Mm-hmm. Greg Hubbard, he's an evangelist. He speaks mm-hmm. at our church six or seven times a year. He's an elder.
Yep.
Tom Rees, who's in the Pendel District office, mm-hmm. was on staff years ago at GT, but is a non-resident elder. Then Jim Comenzo, a friend of our church, attends occasionally. Is just a tremendous man of God. He's an external kind of non-resident elder. And then three of us internally
yeah.
who are on staff and pastors are elders, Brian, myself, and then Phil Baker, our missions pastor.
Now, for people that are listening in that may not be familiar with that kind of structure, there is an interesting piece of that puzzle that you have obviously internal staff who are at a senior level and then external staff who are, it sounds like, are a part of other ministries or are familiar with the ministry context, which particularly at the moments like this, I think it's important to think through who are the people that will be steering the ship at that moment. And in your structure with, maybe internal deacons who they love the church. They're a part of the church. Mm-hmm. They're a part of the ministry, but they may be a doctor, lawyer. They may be like, they're running their own business, whatever, they do whatever in their normal lives. But when it comes to a moment like this, actually having kind of senior leaders from other ministries there, to help, can be just a tremendous gift. Obviously, it's a gift on day in, day out for a lead pastor like Brian to have someone, a group like that, that he can go to on a regular basis, but then particularly at moments like this. So after a few months, again, I feel bad every time we kind of just move along on Brian's life.
Yeah.
After a few months, take me to the moment where, okay, it was clear, obviously he had severe injuries. He had kind of made some progress. It looked like, okay, he's definitely coming back. I'm sure there was a moment where it was like, is he coming? Is he not coming? What's that going to look like? But we get past that. He's definitely coming back. What did the kind of re-entry process look like? I'd love to kind of process that a little bit.
So his re-entry to ministry was slow and fast at the same time, because when you consider what he had been through, I mean, he had, again, pinned under an SUV, lost more than his entire volume of blood, in an induced coma for 3 weeks. I mean, 51 days in ICU. It's amazing that he's right. even alive, right?
Right?
Lost his left leg. It's just incredible. So he started to, once he left the hospital, 51 mm-hmm. days in the hospital, he started to just we would start to have some meetings at his house again, just to fellowship with him, just to see him. We were so glad to just like, Brian, it's so good to see you, you know. And he'd be like, well, it's so good to be seen, you know. And and we would just spend time together. We'd have some casual meetings, you know. Yep. The senior leadership of the church on staff, we'd just go and meet with him, kind of some updates for him. He knew where we were with what's been going on at the church, and him to just maybe speak into some things. And so we'd meet at his house, and then a week later we'd go over again, and just again some conversations that were happening, some meetings that we'd have. Mm-hmm. I think we're frozen again.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm good.
Good. Yep. So then he made it. He's like, you know, you guys surprised me at the house. He did a drop by visit at the church. Just showed up in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
We're like, oh my word, Brian's here. We were like, yeah. We just like called the staff, like, he's here, you know.
Yes.
It was his first day back. Just came by the office. Just surprised us. He was down the street for a doctor's visit and just popped in. So it was like, that was a really exciting staff to see our pastor again. Like, oh my word, Brian's back. And so these were these casual visits and just sporadic. But then as he was starting to feel better and really starting to feel more himself, I think that was what took a while. Again, you can't in 20 minutes describe 51 days in the ICU, as you can imagine. So, but as he started to feel more himself and started to have his mind come clear and his memory and all that, like he started to get more involved, and he'd come to meetings at the church and he'd do, you know, a couple days a week, 4 hours a day, just come, and he'd be in meetings. We'd connect with him, and he'd be part of the senior leadership of the meetings we had to plan ministry. And then we started to talk about, well, what would it look like for you to come back and to just speak to the church, you know? And so we planned an incredible first day back. Again, he wasn't back in the office full time at that point when he first appeared on stage October 18th, 2015, just for the church to see him. And he did preach. He preached the last message in a series that it was called Epic. Series we had planned 6 months before the accident,
crazy.
Called Epic.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the bottom line for that day, which we had written before the accident, was if God brings you to it, he will bring you through it. We'd written that mess, that bottom line to frame out that series before the accident ever occurred. And then as time progressed, we're like, oh my gosh, like Brian could preach that last message. If God brings you to it, he will bring you through it.
Amazing, amazing.
Unbelievable. So the last week of that series, Epic, was incredibly epic for our church. It was probably one of the most amazing moments in our church life.
Absolutely.
By far the most well attended weekend of service. We added two Saturday night services for that week and did Sunday morning, and it was standing room only. It was unbelievable. I cried every service. It was just incredible. He just wheeled out, and he didn't have his prosthetic leg yet. He just wheeled out in the wheelchair. It was like 10 minutes of applause, standing ovation, because our church, we decided to see our pastor again, like on the stage, doing what he's called to do.
Yeah,
it was an amazing, amazing moment. So after that, again, then you're looking at Christmas Eve, and I think he preached one more message between October 18th and Christmas Eve, and then it's Christmas Eve, and he had his prosthetic leg on, and again, there was just so many amazing moments in that. You know,
that's amazing. And then so then he was back, kind of at what point did it kind of transfer back? He was, you know, kind of back in the, not only in the pulpit, but then really leading, you know, was that later that spring, or was it that winter time?
It was before that. It was like the end of the year or the beginning of the year. It was either end of 2015 or beginning of 2016 when we kind of just did this. It was kind of like a re-handoff back to Brian. It kind of happened. We have at that point in time, we had what we call the ministry leadership teams, about 11 of us who were like the, for simple terms, the department leaders. And we were all part of a ministry leadership team, which I had been leading for the last 3 or 4 months in Brian's absence. That was part of the design of my role. And we were just in a meeting, and we were just kind of talking about, like, again, casual conversation among leaders who were friends, just like, you know, at what point do we, you know, transfer leadership back to our pastor. And we just talked, and it's like, I'm like, Brian, whenever you're ready, you're our pastor.
Wow.
He's kind of just transpired. Like, I think I'm ready. Okay.
That's
not me. Cool. I'm here just to serve in your absence. So you were absent, I was serving, but when you're back, you're the leader.
Wow,
so
that's amazing. So much to pull apart here. And the thing I love about this story is there was, again, your credit to your leadership, to Brian's leadership, of really years of building relational equity with each other, with the church, with leaders, to, you know, to bring you to the point where you could weather a storm like this. One last question before we move on with the rest of our episode. I know there's a lot we could talk about, but looking back on it, is there anything that you'd be like, you would say maybe we would have done this differently? You know, there's a piece of this puzzle that, you know, maybe, you know, having been through this, this is literally a once in a lifetime kind of thing. No one knows as you go through it. You're like, okay, we're just relying on the Lord. But now having, you know, kind of hindsight, is there anything that you would have done different?
Huh. Wow, Rich, that's a thought-provoking question, because the beauty of having, again, an incredible staff, a large leadership team. We had a lot of voices around the table at that season. There wasn't like me and three others. Right. It was our ministry leadership team, our deacon board, our elder board. You're talking about 20 people, seasoned leaders and veteran ministry leaders speaking into the big decisions and the timing of when things. I mean, Brian wasn't there for his wife's funeral. One of the hardest decisions we ever made was we were going to bury Lynn, and Brian was going to watch it on a video when he was conscious. And it's bizarre, right? It's incredible. But those kinds of decisions were made by a well-seasoned team. And you're, I'm sure I could come up with some. But I've never thought of that.
Well, like, there's nothing that jumps
like
out.
As we journeyed through that season, I feel like we handled it the best we were able to at the time. I'm sure if I sat down with time, I could write 10 things we would have done differently.
But yeah, that's good. No, I think that's good. Again, I think the thing I'm hoping people are picking out is the depth of leadership, the, you know, pursuing wisdom, you know, asking, you know, staying close to each other, staying relationally connected through it, you know, is amazing.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show. This has been great, you know, today with Scott Kramer from GT Church in Pennsylvania. Scott, what is an online resource that you've been using these days that's been helping you in your ministry?
Yeah, I love to listen to podcast preaching. Because I, you know, one of the things I was called, when I was 29, I was called to ministry. So I never saw myself as a preacher, but it's a craft I want to grow in and a gifting I want to get better at. So I do a lot of listening to podcast preaching. I listen to North Point, Elevation Church. I listen to Ron Carpenter. I listen to T.D. Jakes. I follow a lot of different preachers because I love to just grow in that skill of preaching and teaching.
Yeah, totally.
So that's probably the one thing I use most of all is just I want to get better at as a preacher and teacher and communicator. And I really, when I listen to their messages, I'm blessed personally, but I think I'm looking for ways to grow my own communication and my preaching voice. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that shaped your thinking, shaped your ministry?
Yeah, we've had a lot. We one of the practices we do, again, I think is a strong practice for our church staff, is we read books together.
Yep.
Even at the highest level, our board right now is working through a book called Sticky Teams.
Yeah, that's a great book.
Which is a great book. And so we're working through that with the board and with our executive leadership team on staff. And it we walk together, we pick apart the concepts, and we talk about how they apply to our lives. I'm reading your book right now on Reasonable Churches. It's been a good read.
Now I got to save you $20.
I'll give you the shameless plug for you.
Nice.
But yeah, myself and our campus pastor, Eric Goldsboro, are working our way through that book right now because we're looking at our campus, which is portable right now. We want to see it permanent someday, so we're kind of working through that book right now together, just reading. Again, there's so much value when our staff is reading something together, you know, because we're thinking the same way, we're hearing the same things, and then we can implement and execute together.
Cool. What's another ministry you're looking at that inspires you? You'd mentioned Elevation. Are there any others out there that inspire you?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think a lot of the churches in our country have been learning from Elevation and Andy Stanley and Catalyst and Orange and all that, but I'm inspired by like I mentioned earlier, not a lot of people, I don't think, know Ron Carpenter and his church, but he's a very energetic, charismatic preacher, and he's got a very multicultural, diverse church, and that inspires me. And I think our church has been doing well with that. We want Brian, again, to Brian's leadership, he has said for decades, we want our church to look like heaven. And heaven's going to be populated with every race and tongue and nation and tribe and people group, and we want our church to reflect what heaven's going to look like. And so I'm inspired when I see churches that are not getting it perfect, but getting it right with the racial divide that exists across this country, and seeing lots of languages and nations and skin colors worshiping together. So
very cool. Well, I know being an executive pastor at a church like yours, it takes a lot. But what do you do when you just want to kick back, relax, have some fun?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, I'm married for 17 years with my wife, Kate. We've got two boys who are 14 and 12, Lucas and Matthew, and our daughter, Erilyn, who turned six today. Today's her birthday.
Congratulations.
So she's super excited to be six now. And so my family's number one. I love just being with my family and doing – we love road trips. We love just day trips and doing stuff. So family's number one for me. Then number two would be golf.
Oh, cool.
I absolutely love to golf. So if I get out – I'm happy to get out twice a month and golf with friends. I just enjoy it so much.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Scott, I really appreciate you being on the show. If people want to get in touch with you or the church, how can they do that? What's the best way for them to do that?
Probably our website, gtaog.org.
Great.
gtaog.org.
Perfect. Yep. That's wonderful. Scott, I really appreciate being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Rich, for having me. God bless you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.